This is Incisive Decisive.
Incisive Decisive.
Incisive Decisive. Dentistry, ethics, philosophy. Welcome back to Incisive Decisive. It's me, Sean Sellers, with Colin Campbell.
Hello, hello, hello. Right, so, if we consider series one of Incisive Decisive as a pilot, we've been given, brackets by ourselves, another contract to do series two. Yeah. So we should apologise to the viewer, the listener. For the gap between last, we did one with Simon Thackeray.
Can we blame Simon then?
Yeah, because the audio was terrible on that. Then Simon ran off to become the antithesis, the devil to NHS dentistry or whatever it is in his role as in the PDDDP. And we stopped. Why did we stop when we had so much time to do it?
That's a really good question. I'm blaming myself on trying to get a master's finished.
My reason is more sinister than that. I think mine is shame, to be honest. I think I was not worthy to talk to people about stuff because we were in such a shit place, which we might talk about later.
So
I think that I know that I have a correlation to that because, or a corollary to that, because good word.
That's a good word. Is that what you've been doing during the lockdowns?
I remember years ago when I kind of found I couldn't write the blog, and I was struggling to write the blog. And I spoke to Chris Barrow about it, and he said, that's because you think you're not worthy to write it. And he was right, and I was going through a really bad time. I think it was GDC time and all that. And I thought, I can't be writing this. I've got no mandate to talk to people. And I think that because I was working in this room every single day during lockdown, right? So I would be in here early morning. I was doing press ups and sit ups down here with the door open, and I was the only one here. And it was, we'll go back to that later. I would work all of morning till lunchtime and go home. You know, and there was that. And then there was also everybody in the world started a podcast.
Oh, there's so many out there now.
A web series. Went like that. You know,
geez.
I've got that time. And I couldn't, I got invited on a couple and I did them, and I couldn't be doing with it, you know, because it was just people were giving away, it's a Simpsonsism, but they were giving away their love like so much cheap wine, and so that's perhaps where the gap was. So there you go, but we're back. Ta-da!
We are back with a vengeance. So what are we going to talk about? Is there anything to talk about?
Certainly nothing to do with ethics.
Nothing's been happening, has it?
Nothing's happened, and there's been no scandal, and there's no politics involved in anything. And dentistry has just carried on.
We'd been away.
Because you're at Masters. The Masters that would never die. Is it dead?
Pretty much. It's. I got my, through the post today, I got my letter with my results.
Really?
Yeah, literally today. Yeah, I didn't. We had a little preamble before this, and I got a distinction.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that though. No, congratulations. That's amazing. That is amazing. I didn't know that. That's amazing. Yes. You deserve nothing less.
It was the Masters that wouldn't die because it's taken all our cohort a bit longer to do it because of the current situation. It was interesting. I highly recommend anyone to do that kind of insane research project that I did, that I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit. Then there's hopefully a paper or two coming out of it. So for those of you that don't know, my master's was on non-clinical skills in dentistry. The title was Non-Clinical Skills in Dentistry, Practitioner Perception and Understanding. There you go. That's all done and dusted.
So we need to talk about that. I am surely selfish.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you why that is in a minute. I'll do my big reveal. What's not really.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you why we need to talk about that. But you're also still writing your stuff for the BDG.
Yeah, that's been going for 2 years today, actually, as we record. I saw that pop up on my like time hop this morning. And they're still giving me free rein to say what I like, which I think is insane of them. But I'm very grateful for that. So that's going very well. I write also for the Skeptic magazine, which is an online publication for people that like science-based stuff. So, it's all very interesting. It's all very interesting.
And you're still doing a little bit of dentistry as well.
I'm seeing a little bit of dentistry as well, yeah. A little bit of dentistry.
Longing for the day when the writing funds.
I'm waiting for the sweet ethics money comes rolling in, Charlie.
So the non-clinical stuff is interesting because last year when we opened the practice, I did a masterclass in my own teaching business for the first time ever, and it was aesthetic implant dentistry. But this year my masterclass is the consultation masterclass. And maybe it's a bit arrogant to call that a masterclass because there's no evidence that I'm a master at anything really. But I've always been fascinated by the consultation process, and I am fascinated by it, and I love it. And it is, if I have an average clinician, average surgeon, I hope safe. If I have a superpower, it's in the consultation and in emotional intelligence. And so when someone comes in to me, all the colours come out and I can see for miles, you know. And that is the whole of the non-clinical stuff, or a large element of the non-clinical stuff is the communication, body language, non-verbal patient management stuff, which is massive. And I think people massively underestimate that. And massively underestimate it, particularly in terms of caring for patients and looking after them, but also in terms of even the business element of the practice, because of the way they meet people when they first come in. And so we have a day coming up, which is full, so I'm not touting it, because it's already full. And we go through that in real detail, using a lot of material. And go through the process, divide the consultation into four parts and do all that. So that's why I'm interested to talk. I don't know anything about your project. I need to send me it because I'm going to steal it like I did with the Bill info.
So what you say there is really interesting because I talk to 14, I think, general dentists. So it's limited to general dentists. 14 general dentists about what they thought about non-clinical skills in practice. So for me, non-clinical skills ranges from talking to patients. Everything is, when I explain it to people, it's everything you do that's not with your hands, essentially, not physically practicing dentistry. So it is the communication. It's how to run a business as well. It's all the consent process, all this kind of thing. But when I was talking to people, everyone, apart from one person, everyone solely focus on the communication between dentist and patient.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe dentist and nurse a little bit, and maybe dentist and other dentists. But it's mainly that focus between the dentist and patient, which I found quite interesting in itself, in that the world of non-clinical stuff is huge. It's absolutely massive. But
yep,
we are so focused on the dentist-patient relationship that everything else gets blanked out a little bit. But you've got to think that actually communication in itself is not just a non-clinical skill. It's also a clinical skill. So it's quite a complicated... The relationships there are really difficult, but they're really worthwhile exploring. And one of the things that I was trying to do is work out how we pick up, or how we learn those communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially the way that we do it is that we copy other people and pick and choose the good bits and avoid the bad bits. So yeah, you've got your mentors, and these mentors are either people that you're conscious of taking details from, or people that you just surround yourself with. And either consciously or subconsciously, you pick up certain phrases, certain terms, certain ways of explaining something and integrate it into your practice. And most people consider that these mentors are just going to be other dentists, but actually when you look at it, nurses are just as important, because nurses have probably worked with about like a handful of other dentists, and they'll have picked up all this information from other dentists as well that they can feed into you. So for me as a general dentist, talking to the nurses that I work with, they've got years and years and years worth of experience that's been cherry-picked. And, Mr. Smith used to say this, Mrs. Jones used to say this, and this is how dentist X used to talk to patients to calm them down. So you've got all this information coming into you, and you're filtering out what you can, not necessarily what you consider the best bits, but the bits that resonate with what you already feel. So you can kind of build your own character and own persona as a dentist. And that's what I wrote 15,000 words about.
15,000 words. I've never read 15,000 words in my life.
I'll record it as an audio book and you can put it.
I'll do that. But yeah, it's so interesting to discuss, isn't it? Because we have a kind of attitude here where I work about trying to be outstanding at Ofsted. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was one of our mantras, that was trying to be outstanding at Ofsted. And that comes from my work as a school governor. 13 years and working in schools, managing to navigate a school into a required improvement Ofsted is a high school government, which was surely worth a sacking. And then working now in the last 4 years in an outstanding school and then working in a McCarran Trust and seeing what is required to do that. And of course, I worked in a school which is due to have an Ofsted outstanding, and in its previous Ofsted was not outstanding for teaching, but outstanding for everything else, and got an outstanding Ofsted. How do you get an outstanding Ofsted without being outstanding for teaching? Now, I don't think you would do that anymore, but the point about that is that teaching is one part of the whole experience of looking after the children in school, right? And there's many other parts, and that's the same in any clinical environment, isn't it? So it's not, you know, you can suggest that, I could arrogantly suggest that exceptional level of clinical care at the Campbell Clinic is a given, it's a requirement, right? I don't say that we hit it every single time on the nail, but it's seen as being a no-brainer, right? But every other element of the work which dials into that experience, which is non-clinical, every other element must also be outstanding in order to achieve an outstanding result, mustn't it? And so if you fall down in any of the other areas, you will fail to be outstanding. And it doesn't matter if your clinical work at that point is outstanding. You will not be able to back that up with the other elements which are fundamental to the work. Isn't that right?
I think it goes further than that as well. Certainly in GDP land, where I was looking at, in that there was a real feeling from the general dentists, from us people that are just doing regular bog standard dentistry, for not to demean what GDPs do, but the feeling from pretty much everyone was that A, non-clinical skills were more important to their dentistry than clinical skills are, and B, that non-clinical skills can make up to a certain extent for a deficit in your clinical skills.
No doubt about that.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. Any doubt about that is deluded. And I used to work before you did a master's, and at that stage I would band it all under communication. Right? Mm. It didn't matter because you're right. That was just a coverall for all of the rest of the stuff, right? And I started off by thinking that communication was 50% of dentistry, and then I reached a point where it was 75% of dentistry. And it's at least that, right? Mm. And you know that because there's been tons of research done on this. You know, guys who get sued are more likely to get sued for being a crap communicator than they are for being a crap dentist. Mm. So crap dentists are less likely to get sued for being a communicator. We know that to be the case. So, but it's not just about litigation. It's about success. And so let's bring some ethics in since it's incisive decisive, shall we? Because if your goal is to serve the person sat in front of you in a healthcare style, right? Then you must be in a position to be able to at least in some way persuade them that the advice that you are giving them is in their best interests. So that's controversial, right? But if you see a patient from a position of vast experience in clinical work, whatever that vast experience is, and you know that on balance that patient would benefit from this intervention that you're suggesting, then you're selling to them, okay? However you like to call it, non-sales, selling. And that's essential, because if that patient walks out without that intervention because your communication is not good enough, they have been disadvantaged as a result of a lack of skill. And that's really complicated.
It is really complicated. And on the whole, we're not that good at it, I don't think. Certainly, we don't get taught how to do it in dental school. I spoke to people that were just finishing their foundation years to someone that was about to retire. I think it was the week after I interviewed them. And they all said that they'd had, from the beginning of their dental career, they had no training at all in it, bar maybe a couple of psychology lectures at uni.
That's not how to do it. The way you do it is to reflect and watch yourself doing it. And the way you do it is to go and be a patient and experience both sides of it, right? So go somewhere with a genuine health need and experience being looked after in an utterly shit fashion and reflect upon that and go, I never want a patient. But that is to have insight into your action. That is to have insight into how much empathy you're able to provide. That is to be able to sit in someone else's chair. And that's emotional intelligence. And that is trainable, but so few people would seek out any training or instruction in that area because they think they're already good at it.
So that's really interesting, especially picking up on emotional intelligence. So
most important thing.
I interviewed 14 people. I think maybe 3 people mentioned emotional intelligence by name. Okay. But it was sprinkled through the ideas of the constituents of emotional intelligence, the empathy and whatnot. That was sprinkled through every interview. And it was kind of they got the idea, but they couldn't quite put it all together into one single thing. 2 or 3 people that I'd interviewed that mentioned emotional intelligence by name were at the very, very peak of their career in that they held quite high leadership roles within dentistry.
I've just Googled it there, which is why I was typing everybody.
Yeah.
Go and test your EQ. Why are we not, it's EQ. Why are we not testing EQ at graduation for clinical guys, doctors and dentists, and saying to them, you have a below average level of EQ. Here's some resources to get better.
Well, why is it not taught at dental school or in foundation training as part of a specific training pathway?
Do you know, I know you don't know this, but I'll ask you. Do you know when I first heard about EQ and emotional intelligence?
No, I don't know.
So my boss and I, who Andy Keatley at the time, who worked, it was a BDA, he's now a BDA, he arranged a study day. And I'm sure someone called Alistair Miller came up, and he was a postgraduate dean for the Southwest. So this guy had senior master's degree in practice, and he had raised it a PhD.
Yeah.
From practice, okay? And he sent Andy Keatley a list of possible lecture topics that you could talk about. And they were all clinical this and clinical that and do this and do that. And at the bottom was emotional intelligence. And he said, talk about that. I don't know what it is. Talk about that. And he came up and did a lecture on emotional intelligence in 2000 or 2001. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely mind-bending to me. I sat in that audience going, oh my God, it's like the curtain has lifted. And I ultimately, because Daniel Goleman wrote the book.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And I went to see Daniel Goleman speak in London. Mm. And he released his second book because he defined different types of intelligence.
After that's right, yeah. That's
intelligence right. And all of that. And I've over the years, I've spoken to people about it and chatted about it. But it just doesn't seem to get any traction in, it gets a lot of traction if you're appointing, if Barclays are appointing a CEO.
Yeah.
A lot of traction, mm-hmm. right? But the people that I meet, and that's when I arrogantly talk about, so I know my EQ is very high and my IQ is very low. That's which is true, right? The IQ is unadjustable. It's coded. IQ is not trainable. That's what people don't understand. So your base level of IQ is coded in. The EQ is totally adjustable. And you can train it in children. Why are we not teaching to children? I know that I can smell, I can see the atmosphere in a room immediately, right? I can see it. I can see when you're getting bored. I can see when you're fed up. It's what people who are neurologically diverse really struggle to see.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's why, you know, restorative clinicians generally are shite at treating patients. Because in order to select to be a restorative clinician, you are on what we now call the line of neurological diversity. They are more towards the line of neurological diversity, which is detail, not emotional intelligence. And that's a generalization, which is utterly true for all of them. No, it's not true. But you just see the point. And it's a point of discussion, which is so important. But if you ran a course on EQ, nobody would come up. It wouldn't come. So I know you've been thinking about this because you've been looking at that as a commercial option.
I have been looking at that.
I will stand at the front with you, or I will sit in the front seat with you. They will not come.
It's the issue, isn't it? I think because dentists think of dentistry, the only thing that makes money in dentistry is actually doing dentistry.
Doing dentistry, which is ludicrous.
It's crazy, isn't it?
The only thing that makes money in dentistry is patients trusting you to have the dentistry done and happily paying for it because they see that it's valuable.
Yeah.
That's what makes money in dentistry. Yeah. It's mental. There is an unconscious, is it conscious, explicit, implicit? People assume that EQ, they don't know what it is, but they know there's a thing, right? Like your affability or your communication ability or whatever you want to call it. They assume that it's coded in and it isn't. And that's the big, big kicker. It's not at any age is it coded in.
Well, that's the big thing that Goldman said, wasn't it? Is that you can train for this. You can can build this. The thing is, that's what patients look for. So the end result of my research was that dentistry isn't about teeth. It's not about doing fillings. It's not about putting implants in. It's building relationships with patients. And that's the key thing. If you can build a genuine relationship with your patients, you will be successful in what you do.
So... this is great. I need to read your master's. I wasn't really arsed. I am now. Have you ever seen Anchorman?
Yes, I have.
Have you therefore seen Anchorman 2?
I have not seen Anchorman 2.
So I consider that a significant deficiency. And we should come up now. Have you ever seen Bombshell?
No.
So Bombshell is a true story about sexual harassment at Fox News, okay? Mm-hmm. Which I didn't know anything about, which I think has been hushed up, to be honest, because it was before Harvey Weinstein, but it was of that order. And bizarrely, Anchorman 2 is about the setting up of something called GNN, i.e. CNN, but it's that type of culture. Yeah. So the Anchorman movies are, if you've never watched them, they are genius satirical comedy. They're genius, right? The second one particularly. So there is a scene in which Ron Burgundy meets his new, this is not a film review site, but hey, meets his new boss at GNN, whose name is Linda Jackson. And two people walk into the room, and it is a female of colour, person of colour, and a WASP male. And he walks up to the WASP male and says, "Linda Jackson, nice to meet you." And they go, "Oh no, Ron, that's Linda Jackson." And Ron goes, "Right?" And he can't help but saying that word, right? And his sidekick says, "Read the room, Ron." And so that is a phrase in my house, is a standard phrase to my kids. Read the room, right? So when there's inappropriateness, you just go, step back and read the room. Mm-hmm. And that's training in EQ. Read the room. Sit back, watch where the faces are, watch what's happening, watch what the mood is, take a step back. It's the easiest way to train it. And you can do that with a patient. And the way you do it with a patient, help me, I'm very excited. The way you do it with a patient is you adopt 2 ears and 1 mouth, and you listen twice as much as you speak. And the average clinician talks 14 seconds into a consultation.
The research must be, the way that you can look at it is that there's such a power difference in the surgery between the dentist and the patient that you need to be able to bring your levels of power down and elevate your patient's power upwards so that you're more on an even level.
We've been working on exactly the same thing. So I'm going to give all my material away from a masterclass now before the guys come, right? I'm going to do a little experiment on you. I'm going to ask you to do an exercise here on video, because this will be available on video for people to watch. We'll probably have to describe it. It's all audio. I don't even know what we're doing.
I'm recording the video as well, so we'll put it on a YouTube channel or something.
What I want you to do with your left hand in a minute, I'm going to tell you to start, is snap your fingers 5 times and then draw the capital letter E on your forehead. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Go.
With my left hand as well?
Yeah. So that's fascinating, right? Because that's a test of empathy. In which direction did you draw the E?
I drew the E so you could read it.
Correct. So that defines you as an empathic person or a person in an empathic state. So there has been research done with medical professionals and trainee medical professionals where you can alter their empathic levels depending upon their circumstance and then test them with such tests. One of the things you do as a dentist to reduce that is you go to the waiting room yourself and call your patient, because otherwise you send someone to bring the patient into your lair. So the power dynamic delivery is massive, as you so rightly say, right? It's massive and immediately builds a barrier to empathy. So you call the patient in, and you also call the patient in and introduce yourself by your first name.
Always.
And on your scrubs, it doesn't say Professor, Doctor, President, called Mr. Colin Campbell, all these letters that nobody understands, which we see all the time, right? Which is clearly people who are enormously insecure about their professional life. It says, Colin, and it starts the conversation with two ears and one mouth on an equal footing with a patient who feels as though you're on the same side. Just wasted all my bloody material.
Well, that was about half an hour's worth of we're now currently writing the Sellers and Campbell approach to non-clinical skills in dentistry
textbook.
Yes,
textbook, ebook, DVD series. It'll be available in VHS video from Blockbuster.
Betamax.
Yeah, that was good for our first go. For season two.
Yeah.
Hey. Okay.
That was incisive, decisive.
It was, yes, it was.
Yes, we are back. Incisive, decisive, back in your ears where we belong. If you want to get in touch with us to talk about non-clinical skills or anything else that's captured your imagination, you can email us on info@incisivedecisive.com. Alternatively, we're on Twitter @incisivepod and our Facebook page is facebook.com/incisivedecisive. You can find me on Twitter @thewholetooth and I'll put a link to Colin's blog in the show notes. If you like the podcast, think about leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us spread the word, as is shown in the link to our episode. As always, our music is provided by Gallops. Hear more at gallopsandgallops.com. Until next time, that was Incisive Decisive. Now I'm off to pitch a non-clinical skills course to Colin. Can you remember how to do this? Mm-hmm. We're gonna label it as series two, so no one forgets that slight gap we've had.
The first thing we're going to talk about is that gap. That's what I want to talk about. So that's what we're going to talk about first. I'm going to try. You can blank me if you want.
Oh God! Yeah, go on then.